It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Monson Show. I am Kim Monson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Monson, MONSON.com. A podcast of all the shows, all the recaps are there. Sign up for my weekly newsletter. You will get first look at all of the upcoming guests as well as our most recent podcasts and our most recent op-eds there. So be sure and sign up for that. We'd appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like. We have a fabulous show planned for you today. In studio with me is one of my great partners, and that is Hal Van Herke with Castlegate Knife and Tool. It is great to have you here, Hal.
Great to be here, Kim. Looking forward to it. Looks like we've got a really packed agenda.
I think
a lot of people calling in today.
I think so, and I think that you've got some good commentary. Well, we're going to be talking a lot about the CDC modeling. We'll be chatting with Carl Dierenbach in the third and fourth segment. He has written an excellent chapter in the book Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Hard Left Turn and a Warning to America. And he talks about all this modeling and how this has been used to really shut down our businesses, shut down our livelihoods. And that will be a really good conversation, Hal.
Yeah, everybody I know who either runs a business, works for a small business, or has people that they care about that own small business is much more concerned about how the government's going to treat small business going forward than they are about catching COVID.
That's
impacting. We're at a point right now where government enforcement against privately owned businesses more detrimental than the disease itself, right?
And they're basing it on, he said, basically in a complete Colorado op-ed that he did, that it's basically based on tarot cards.
Yeah.
And
they're using their old forecasting model that they had originally, plugging in a few unknown variables that they just make up out of thin air, or grab something that they agree with and put it in, and then make policy and make it mandatory policy versus advisory policy. And, you know, so, yeah, being a member of the small business community, I'm much more looking at news that relates to, am I going to be asked to shut down? Or am I going to be asked to make modifications to my business that make me unprofitable and not able to continue? Then I am looking to see what the virus rates are in my local county or town. I want to know how the government's going to impact me.
Yeah. Well, you'll find this a really important conversation. We're going to be talking with Dr. Jill Vecchio in the second segment, and she has a really interesting anecdotal story that she's going to share with us regarding COVID as well. It's great to have you here. You are a valued partner. Castlegate Knife and Tool is a family-owned business. You're located right in Sedalia, Colorado. I've been out to the store. The amount of inventory that you have is absolutely astounding.
Yeah, and it's growing every day. We're ramping up our inventory for the holiday season coming up, and so it's stacks and stacks of boxes every day arriving. So we have over 3,000 different knives in stock. That includes outdoor knives, folding knives, everyday carry knives, self-defense weapons. We also carry several complete lines of kitchen knives, just about anything you can imagine.
I've had a couple of weddings that I went to and have given very nice steak knife sets as gifts. Really appreciate it. You now have 2,999 knives because
you just
brought in this. This is a great utility knife. I need something. I have some foam board that I need to cut up and put in the trash, and this will be perfect for that, right?
Yes.
This is a great utility knife.
Should be
knife.
Perfect. And did you pick that color?
I did.
Yeah.
Linnea
pumpkin spice.
Yes, we got it. Great for fall. Great show, as I mentioned.
Producer Steve is looking.
Oh,
he wants to see the knife.
See this, Steve? I'm excited about this.
It's funny because I want to get down there because of the tool pieces, the component of the business. Because of my age, I get that my wife basically said, you can't buy any more tools. But I think I want to come down and check that out.
How about for Christmas? Can get you something for Christmas.
Yeah, okay. Hey, I got something here in terms of the segue into the whole theme of the show, besides your first couple of guests. 2020 is a year of disguises. Some examples include computer models or modelers disguised as scientists, tyrants, dictators disguised as elected officials, propaganda machines disguised as news sources. So, yeah, that sets the tone for everything you want to say today.
That's for sure. And the first five people that email me at Kim@KimMunson, that's MONSON.com, will receive a free electronic copy of Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Hard Left Turn and a Warning to America. I'm going to stay right on task here. Always say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that's Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, the people here at Crawford Broadcasting, my great partners, such as Hal Van Herkey with Castle Gate Knife and Tool. And each of you listeners, you are each treasured, valued. You have a purpose today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. They say that the polls look like Donald Trump is making a comeback. And tonight is the third debate with the very left-wing moderator. We'll see what happens with that. But I thought, okay, comeback. Who could I quote? And Vince Lombardi. He was an American football coach and executive of the National Football League, best known as the head coach of the Green Bay Packers during the 1960s, where he led the team to three straight and five total NFL championships in 7 years, in addition to winning the first two Super Bowls at the conclusion of 1966 and 67. He was born in 1913. He died in 1970, and he said this: confidence is contagious, and so is lack of confidence. And with that, I want to move right on over. We have a candidate on the line. He is a candidate, the Libertarian candidate for Senate, Ramon Doan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Kim.
You're running for U.S. Senate. Tell us why.
The reason why I'm running for U.S. Senate is to provide people more options. Right now, we continue to see this political division within our nation, and it is coming from the Republican and Democratic Party. I tell everybody that it's not because you're a Republican, it's not because you're a Democrat, it's not because of your affiliation, it's because of the character of your elected officials that have placed us in the position of where we are today. So I wish to provide some more character, better character in office. That's why I'm running for U.S. Senate.
Well, you're a young guy, it's exciting to me to see all of these young, diverse candidates stepping forward to run for public office. What's your thoughts on the issues that are facing us? What are you hearing out on the campaign trail, Ramon?
We hear a lot about, police brutality. We hear a lot about water rights, especially on the Western Slope. Term limits is something I always bring up because of how long politicians have been in office, longer than I've been alive, just for one seat. So a lot of those things are coming up on the campaign trail, and I believe I have the solutions for them, especially when it comes to water rights, term limits, because on the ballot, I have actually subjected myself voluntarily to two term limits if elected as U.S. Senator.
Okay. I've been a bit uncomfortable, Ramon, with term limits. I know many people are proponents of it. I would like to have the citizens, and I'll throw this over here to Hal Van Herkey. I'd like to have the citizens, the voting citizens, put in the term limits at the ballot box. And we also have this big administrative state of these unelected bureaucrats that they're unaccountable to us. And I'm not quite sure how to fix that. Hal Van Herkey, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I am an advocate for term limits.
Okay.
But like most things, it would be ideal if it was done voluntarily and if it was done by their constituencies deciding it was time for them to move on and let somebody else have a chance, and if they wanted to protect their seats from becoming a lifetime seat, prone to corruption, etc. But I think that it's too much to ask given our two-party system, the level of entrenchedness that we have with the lobbyists and their influence in the U.S. I'd definitely like, at this point, I'd like to see term limits. I'd like it to get back to the point where it was citizens serving their community versus serving themselves. And I'd like to get back to the point where they felt like they were representing in their local community versus representing their party's interests, et cetera. I think that would make a lot of big difference in what we have today. I think that the two-party system, going back to our guest here, I think that the two-party system, the way that it has systematically entrenched itself into our politics today is very much part of the problem. I'm actually an advocate of multi-party as well as term limits for the U.S. at this point in our evolution. I think that we need to have a diversity of opinion. We need to have people who are there to voice their opinions and what their constituents care about, and we need to kind of find ways to break up this lifetime duopoly that we have right now of the two parties.
Okay. Ramon Doan, it sounds like Hal Van Herkey is singing your tune, huh?
Yes, he is. I was like, wow.
What's your final thoughts, Ramon, regarding this particular election? What's the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Just to make sure that they consider all their options. I was formerly Republican, and one of the reasons why I left the party is because, again, I saw that divisiveness. And when we continue to limit ourselves, we actually place ourselves within a position where we cannot benefit, where we actually continue to hurt ourselves, and it's just a spiral down forward. We're actually devolving instead of evolving. We need to actually make that happen in regards to evolving so we can move forward, get to where we need to be, actually promote the solutions that we have, and then we don't have to really continue to worry about having all these political talks. We can actually have more drinks with our friends and enjoy life in general, not worry about who's in office.
Okay. Ramon Doan, how can people get more information about you?
So they can go to my website, doan4colorado.com. If you type in a word for it, it'll take you there too as well.
Okay.
And then I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So if you type in my name, it's pretty unique. It's spelled R-A-Y-M-O-N. And nor do I for the pronunciation, but R-A-Y-M-O-N-D-O-A-N-E for my last.
Okay. And that's D-O-A-N-E, 4colorado.com, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Ramon, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. You have a great day. And Bill McCaleb is on the line, and he is running for Colorado House District 6. Bill McCaleb, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. We're coming in, just a little over a week, and it is election day. I know you've been working hard. What are you hearing now out on the campaign trail?
Well, more than anything, you know, I think you said enough. It's doggone close to the finish line, and so we're still here, and from the conservative side, we're speaking kind of the reasonable balance sort of things, you know, whereas the other side is still on the Green New Deal, still wants to get rid of Tabor, still wants to do the things that they're against the bringing fees to the decision of the voters. I mean, it's all the kind of stuff that I don't think really reflects the will of the voters.
I've been thinking a lot, Bill McCaleb, about property rights. Karen Levine is one of my great partners. She's an award-winning realtor with REMAX Alliance. We talk a lot about home ownership. Of course, the guy's over with I'm a Trumpster. We talk about intellectual property rights. There's something so unique about the American idea that people can work and keep most of the fruits of their labor, and they will thrive and prosper. What we've seen here in Colorado with the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, it has put guardrails on how much the government takes from us without our permission. And also, Rick Turnquist has said, this whole thing regarding fees, fees were actually kept out of Tabor because they said, oh my gosh, if the library district has to raise the book fees for late books, don't want to have to ask the voters. Well, that loophole is, as Rick says, so big you could drive an aircraft carrier through it. And you just mentioned that your opponent doesn't want to have to ask people about how much money they're going to take from us.
Yep, that's exactly right. And I think the whole idea of fees was just kind of a redefinition of what amounts to be taxes. And so I think it's right that we clear up that definition and say, hey, look, if the fees are significant,
more than $100 million in 5 years.
Yeah, thank you. I was struggling for that one, but if the fees are significant, that it really is a tax, and it really ought to go to the decision of the voters, and that's kind of what I'm all about. It is about being reasonable. It is about being balanced. They forgot what that is downtown in the state capitol, and so I'm looking to bring some professionalism I'm certainly, you know, I come out of business. Your previous guest was a younger guy. I'm more of an older guy. But at the end of the day, because of that, I've got a lot of business experience and have dealt with a lot of budgets in the past. I know how to deal with the curbs on the path to getting a budget that hopefully balances.
Well, my friends, we continue to go to the ballot box and say no to questions that would get rid of Tabor or would weaken Tabor. And I can't figure out why then we elect these far left Democrats that want to take more and more of our money. And I think, voters, you need to wake up and make sure that you're putting people down there at the state house that respect you, your family, your livelihoods, and keep things within reason. Bill McCaleb, you're running for Colorado House District 6. I'm recommending people adopt candidates. You're adoptable. How can people help you?
They can certainly help me a lot by going on the website. That's BillBringsIt.com. It's spelled ITT, or if you even misspell it, just plain IT. It still brings you to the same place. There's a spot to volunteers. There's a spot to donate. But more than anything, learn more about me. Learn what my talents and abilities are, and I want to really bring that to support the will of the people here in Colorado.
Bill McCaleb, again, that is Bill Brings It. That's ITT.com, BillBringsIt.com. Thank you so much, and good luck.
Thank you so much, Kim. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. We're going to go to break. In studio with me is one of my valued partners, and that's Hal Van Herkey. With Castlegate Knife and Tool, which is located right down in Sedalia, Colorado. Before we do that, though, another one of my great partners is Hooters Restaurants. They have 5 locations: Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. And they go pink every October to fight breast cancer. And this year, Hooters across the U.S. are working to raise money for the Breast Cancer Fundraising Fund. Their goal is, as a company, is to, and this is throughout the United States, to raise $1 million. Last year, they raised $700,000, Hal Van Herkey. That's pretty amazing for a company. And there's a lot of different things you can do. It all has a pink theme. Go to HootersColorado.com for more information. That's HootersColorado.com for more information. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Jill Vecchio regarding her latest update on the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. And one other thing. The first 5 people that email me at kim@kimmunson.com, and that's MONSON.com, will receive a complimentary electronic copy of the new book, Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Hard Left Turn and a Warning to America. We'll be right back.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. We've got our voter's guide that Rick Turnquest and I put together. It's very thorough. We spend a lot of time on that. As you fill out your ballot, this will be a great tool to help you out on that as well. In studio with me is Hal Van Herkey. He is the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool. I'm so excited to get my my pumpkin spice utility knife. Thank you for bringing that in.
I have to point out that you and my wife selected that color.
Yes, we did.
I didn't have anything to do with that.
But she had sent me all the colors. That was a white.
But we do have the type of selection that would allow you to make that choice.
I love it. I love it. On the line with me is Dr. Jill Vecchio. You know her. She's a frequent guest on the show. She also, we have a lot of different podcasts that we've done together. She is just a wealth of knowledge. Dr. Jill, welcome to the show. It is October and Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Hooters Restaurants is raising a bunch of money for breast cancer awareness, and that's been your life's work, is to help women regarding mammograms. Your radiologist, I know this is near and dear to your heart.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yes, everybody should pay attention during October, but also the rest of the year. We always are busiest between October. It usually spills into November and December, but this is our busiest time of year.
Okay. Well, it is really important. And many women, that was one of the things regarding the whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, is many women delayed their routine mammograms.
Absolutely. Our many breast centers were practically virtually closed down, maybe a few screening mammograms. A lot of them weren't doing anything. And usually we find at one facility that's busy in South Dakota where I work, there are maybe 3 cases a week. So you think of 6 months with 3 cases a week, and we, you know, it didn't go on the whole 6 months, but it was probably 3 or 4 months before we were up and going again to some extent, to a decent volume. Now we're close to normal volume. But that's a lot of cases that are somewhere out there.
That were delayed.
Hopefully we're, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Jill, wanted to talk with you about the most recent COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. We're seeing some more draconian restrictions coming down from some of the PBIs, those politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties. What's your thoughts? You had mentioned something that I have talked to people a lot about. They say, more and more cases, more and more cases. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out we're going to have more and more cases because we're doing more and more testing. But you said the first question is to ask, are you sick? And was it an antibody test or was it a viral test? And that has been very helpful. I've mentioned that to people and they kind of stop and they go, oh, are they sick? That's a big question.
Right. And most people that I know of, and that can tell you, I know of like one person, 3 friends removed, right, in Colorado that's actually had it. And maybe it's just the circles I run in, but nobody that I really know of has had it except a friend of a neighbor. In Iowa, I come here and everybody knows somebody. I know probably, and I don't know that many people here, but I probably know 15 or 20 people
in Iowa,
that have had
right?
it.
In Iowa. Have any of them died from it?
Very odd, but most of them, the mother of one of my neighbors up here died. She had been in a really nice nursing home. I think they got short-staffed because people were being quarantined because they tested positive, so they moved a lot of the patients into other nursing homes. And when they got moved to other nursing homes, then a bunch of them got COVID from the other nursing homes, including
honestly
my neighbor's mother, and she passed away. Yeah, because she was moved to a different nursing home. And it wasn't because people were sick. It was because they'd been exposed and were quarantined, or they tested positive and were quarantined. You know, we're still doing a lot of the contact tracing, and people are quarantining without ever really being sick and whether or not they're tested positive. So it's kind of this snowballing effect, especially in that case. Now, I have another neighbor up here that went throughout their family. Everybody in the family got it over about a 2-week period, tested positive, and were a little bit sick. One of them was very sick, was in the hospital, not in the ICU, but in the hospital, the husband. And I talked to the wife, and it's a small hospital in, you know, kind of a semi-rural area in Iowa. And I was talking to her about the treatments and so forth. It's very scary. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. under those circumstances. And you need to time things properly for the treatments. So you want to start with hydroxychloroquine early on, move on to other treatments, and as well as antibiotics, and keep a close eye on things. They asked for hydroxychloroquine, and the hospital wouldn't give it to them, which I found very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to the wife, and I said, ask about remdesivir. So I spelled it for her, and I got a call the next day, or no, I got a text the next day from this friend, and she said, thank you for saying that, because the docs had never prescribed it for COVID before. They would not have prescribed it had I not specifically asked for it. They gave it to him, and within 12 hours, he was remarkably better.
Hal Van Herkey, what do you think about that? Isn't that astounding?
It's one of the things I've learned throughout all of this is that there's no guarantee that even with all this going through the news that your primary care physician or that who you meet in the hospital or somebody who's responsible for guiding your care has really kept up on this and has been reading the same news that we've been reading. And that's not the first time I've heard of somebody having to advocate for a particular drug that they wanted, and that the doctor comes back and gratefully says, I'm glad you told me about that. I've had similar experiences with my doctors early on when they didn't even know what COVID was, so I would bring printouts from China and stuff like that to show them. And it's, I don't know where they get their news from, and you think the profession would keep them up to date, but they really don't. So take your health care into your own hands, and you are the advocate for your own health, and just because they're wearing a white coat doesn't mean that they're infallible, and you should stand up for your rights and assert for what you want and push for your position.
And Dr. Jill, that's really good advice. When you were telling me this story and how you just affirmed it as well, it's astounding to me. Every healthcare professional should be all over this hydroxychloroquine and all of these different treatments. And as you just mentioned, once he advocated for himself, within 12 hours, he was doing better. And it seems to me like the CDC should have that information out to all of the medical professionals out there, Jill.
You know, the information is there. You have to look for it. The CDC website is a very cumbersome website. As you know, I've spent many hours on the CDC website, and you have to jump all over the place. You have to search just the right terms to find what you need. But at the same time, the mainstream media has done such a disservice to this country on their reporting on hydroxychloroquine, for instance. The idea that they requested it. There are so many studies out there supporting it. The president has taken it. It's a safe drug, and yet the doctors refused to offer it to them. I find it, where have you been living, under a rock? And it's your job. If you're taking care of these patients, it is your job to know what disease you're treating and how to treat it. As a physician, that's your job. And the mainstream media, because this has been so politicized, think how many people are not getting proper treatment, not getting rapid treatment, are going to suffer long-term health consequences, perhaps die, because the mainstream media won't report on this or reports adversely just because it's President Trump. The politicization of this thing, it is so harmful to the community, in my opinion, that the mainstream media, somebody needs to be held accountable when this is reviewed at some point in the future. We probably never will. But this is, to me, this is just an outrage. This is so harmful to patients and the population at large.
Well, it really is. And we'll be talking with Carl Dierenbach in the third and fourth segment regarding the unmasking of what is actually happening. In all of this, Jill, I'm grateful that it seems that the mask is off, the veil is off on some of these agendas. We continue to talk about it every day on this show to shed light, give people the truth so that they're armed with the truth and they can talk with their friends and their family and their colleagues about these important issues. I really appreciate you sharing this anecdotal story of your friend there in Iowa that once they had requested, which drug was that, Jill, again?
That's a remdesivir.
Okay. Within 12 hours,
right.
He was doing better. Dr. Jill, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Jason McBride, is that not an amazing story that the docs referred to prescribe hydroxychloroquine, which we know it's been around for 50-some years, and they refused to do that, even though it could have helped the patient. And then once something was prescribed that they had not even heard of, the patient got better in 12 hours.
Yeah, well, it's not the first head shaker that we've heard through this whole pandemic crisis, is it, Kim?
Not at all. And today is a big day, Jason McBride. It is the third debate tonight. What's your thoughts on that?
I think you're going to see another case of 2-on-1. I predict that absolutely the woman they've chosen, I mean, you've seen her as part of the White House press crew. She is one of the most aggressive, one of the nastiest ones out there, and I bet she just can't wait to mute President Trump's mic just so she could say that she's the person that muted President Trump. So I believe it's going to be another farce, probably another 2-on-1. It should be interesting to see what questions she's come up with to cast Trump in a bad light and coddle Joe Biden. So I highly doubt that anybody's going to get much of anything out of this debate. I mean, what would you put the odds at? 5,000 to 1 that she'll ask Joe Biden anything about Hunter Biden's laptop and the emails on there?
I'm not going to take that bet, that's for sure, Jason McBride.
Yeah, I wouldn't take it for a dollar.
Nope. Hey, as we're what, less than 2 weeks? Is it 2 weeks? Yeah, we're less than 2 weeks out on the election. Mm-hmm. And I continue to recommend that people check out airpresidential.com with the analysis that you've done regarding the Trump tax cuts. It is the truth. It's black and white. Everyday people have done much better under the Trump tax cuts. Government has taken less of your money. The Harris-Biden, Biden-Harris ticket has said they're going to repeal the Trump tax cuts, but that people making less than $400,000, it won't affect them. They're talking out of both sides of their mouth, Jason McBride.
Well, they certainly are. So it's either one or the other. Either you're going to repeal them or you're not going to repeal them and you're going to make some changes. I don't know which one it is. I don't think they know which one it is, but I highly doubt that anybody making under $400,000 is going to come out of their plan being untouched. And that could certainly include a lot of small businesses that make under $400,000 that get caught with a business tax rate that goes from 21% back up to 28 or possibly more.
Oh, man, that Hal Van Herkey, you're not going to like that.
No, I'm not going to like that. I'm kind of on the, this is the first time I've ever been a big fan of a rapper, and I'm kind of on the same level as 50 Cent. I don't want to be turned into 20 Cent.
Can you believe 50 Cent came out and also Ice Cube for Donald Trump? Jason McBride, I really recommend people go to airpresidential.com and check this out. You've done a great analysis on that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Kim.
Okay, we'll talk to you tomorrow after the big debate. Have a great day. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Hal Van Herkey is in studio. He is the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool, a very valued partner of the Kim Munson Show. We'll be talking with Carl Dierenbach, who has a chapter in this book, Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Hard Left Turn and a Warning to America. My researcher, Patty Kurgan, also has a chapter there, as well as me. And we'll be right back. Oh, let me just mention, for any of you, the first five people that email me at kim@kimmunson.com, we will get you a complimentary electronic copy of the book. So be sure and get to your computer and email me. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
When politicians want to raise taxes, they're supposed to give you a say in the matter. They're not supposed to sidestep the law and make you pay more without your approval. But that's exactly what politicians are doing. And that's why we need Proposition 117. Proposition 117 gives us, the taxpayers, a voice. It allows us to vote on large fee increases, which we all know are just hidden taxes. For far too long, politicians in Colorado have raised the cost of car registrations, health insurance, and even hospital stays without giving voters a choice. They get away with it by calling their cost increases fees instead of tax hikes. Voting yes on Proposition 117 would change that and stop the hidden tax hikes. Vote yes on Proposition 117 to give Coloradans the voice they deserve. Paid for by Unite for Colorado. Katie Kennedy, registered agent.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests and all of our most recent op-eds. Go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. We have our voter's guide there. Rick Turnquist and I spend a lot of time on that. It's a great tool as you're filling out your Colorado ballot. Would highly recommend not to mail your ballot back, but in fact, drop it in one of those secure ballot boxes or vote in person. And recommend that once you put your ballot in the ballot box, track it with your local county clerk to make sure that your ballot has been received and that it has been noted that you have voted. On the line with us, well, in studio with me is Hal Van Herke with Castlegate Knife and Tool. I know that this whole conversation is near and dear to your heart, Hal Van Herke.
Yeah, I think anything that has to do with how government's interacting with the public and how government's interacting with small business in particular is of keen interest to me, and how we balance this battle between safety and freedom. You know, so I think it's it's at the heart of what makes us a republic.
You know? Well, most definitely. And Carl Dierenbach, who has a chapter in this book, Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Hard Left Turn and a Warning to America, has really researched this modeling. He's an engineer, he's an attorney, he's an author, he's writing for The Federalist now. Carl Dierenbach, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. Glad to be here.
You have done a lot of research regarding this COVID modeling, and you said that basically it's based on tarot cards. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was a title that they put onto my Federalist article, and it's basically saying it doesn't have any real meat to it underneath. It's based on hospitalizations that occurred in the past is their output. So they're not really calculating anything. They have like 80 variables in there, but in the end, what the whole model does is it just takes whatever number of hospitalizations happened 2 weeks ago, and it crunches some numbers and spits out a social distancing number, and that's it. That's all it does. It's not very predictive. It doesn't predict the future. They just give a range for the future. So they'll say, if social distancing is 0%, everybody catches it and there's massive death. If social distancing is 100%, nobody gets it, nobody goes to the hospital. And then whatever in between, they're not really predicting. They're just saying, oh, that was because some level of social distancing. And so if hospitalizations go up, the model says social distancing goes up, and then Polis says, hospitalizations went up, we have to increase social distancing. So it's sort of just this false pretend thing when Polis could just say, if hospitalizations go up, we lock down more. Hospitalizations go down, we lock down less. And that is basically it. But then he uses it as some sort of talisman to sort of point to, oh, it's not me making a decision. It's this model. It's this great model. And so we should follow the science. It's just witchcraft. It's not, it's not science how people think it is.
When they're reporting these hospitalization numbers, is that an aggregate number of since the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption started? Or is that, as of right now, this is how many people are in the hospital and they attribute it to COVID?
It's the latter, and it's the number of people that they say is in with COVID. I don't think it's attributed to COVID. So it's a very interesting point you bring up, because if you look at the curve of the past hospitalization, when things are going well, it comes down, but it never goes below a certain level. There's sort of this floor to hospitalization that we've never gone under. And this happens across the country, all different states at all different times, especially in the summer when COVID was probably naturally being camped down by the weather in a lot of places. Every place that you see would come down to a floor, but they wouldn't get lower than that floor. And so the suspicion is a couple reasons. One, if you have COVID in the community and someone goes in for a HIF and they get tested and they have COVID, but they weren't there for COVID, you know, a certain percentage of people are going to be in that category. So you're going to have hospitalizations that weren't necessarily for COVID, but they show up as COVID. And then the other one is these PCR tests that they're using are way oversensitive. And they may also be seeing 1-3% false positives, which would explain that floor. Because if you go in and you test every single person, if you test 100 people and you get 1-3 false positives, you're going to have 1-3 COVID patients in there. And the hospital isn't going to, I haven't heard of any hospitals retesting, trying to verify positives or anything like that. My suspicion is those go in, you get a positive test, you go down as a COVID patient, and you go into that COVID patient, COVID hospitalization statistics. And so you have this full floor that you can't get above. Now, recently, we have come off of that floor because we are seeing more cases. Interestingly enough, John Samath, the dean of the Colorado School of Public Health, he recently said in a Denver Post article that he doesn't know why cases are going up. And I don't know if this is good or bad, because it's the first time I've ever heard them admit that they don't know what's going on. But if you look across the country, it seems that COVID is going to be a seasonal thing. And as flu season is starting, COVID, there is going to be COVID resurgence while we're still, as a population, susceptible to it at a certain level.
Carl, there are treatments out there. I'm not sure if you heard the previous segment, Dr. Jill Vecchio, told an anecdotal story of a friend of hers back in Iowa that everyone in the family tested positive for COVID, and the woman's husband got sick and ended up in the hospital. They didn't know about hydroxychloroquine, and they didn't know about remdesivir or whatever, however you say that, and they asked for it, and the hospital refused to give the patient hydroxychloroquine. And they did give him the remdesivir, whatever it is, and he got better within 12 hours. It's astounding to me that there's a politicization on this where it almost seems like they care more about these numbers, these bigger numbers, than about the patient. What's your thoughts on that, Carl?
I don't know about the medical effectiveness of the various drugs, but I do know hydroxychloroquine is such a frustrating subject, because here's a drug that's been used 50, 60 years for malaria. And you go back and I've looked at the history of it, and there's nobody talking about how dangerous it is. It's given out all the time, especially in tropical regions. You can't find any study saying it's harmful. And then all of a sudden, when people started saying that, hey, this could help for COVID, all of a sudden you had these studies coming out, one that was retracted, saying it caused, I believe, some sort of heart problem. And yeah, and so you see, I don't know the underlying medical efficacy of it, but I can look at something and say that isn't right when a drug that's been so safe for so long is declared deadly to get it from being used. maybe it isn't going to help, maybe it is, but it seems like such a safe drug that it seems like, hey, why not? Or why not let doctors prescribe it if they want? And it just shows just politicalization like you're talking about that's so troubling. And then when you see that, it spills over into every other decision because now you're looking at every drug that the experts are saying is okay or not okay, and you wonder, well, is that a political decision?
Right.
It undermines the faith, and it's very troubling.
Hal, you've got a comment.
Yeah, I kind of bring this roundabout to get back to this conversation about how our model works here in Colorado. But I mean, you could argue about whether or not remdesivir works. You could argue about various drugs of how effective they are, and one doctor is going to argue with the next, and one political side might argue with the next. But one of the things you can't argue with that overall, with you know the evolving treatment procedures and treatment protocols that we've had for this, the number of cases that had to be hospitalized has gone down significantly as a percentage of overall cases throughout the course of this pandemic, and the number of fatalities have gone down. The number of critical care visits have gone down, and you know that's what's really key in terms of monitoring the at-risk patients about whether or not we have those ICU rooms available. And that seems to be what the model in Colorado is most concerned about. But maybe they've made changes recently, but the last thing I read about this was that they hadn't changed their model to reflect the reduced likelihood of somebody ending up in one of those ICU units or having to be hospitalized. They were still going off of presumed treatment successes and imaginary treatment pathways versus taking into account everything we've learned up to this date.
Carl Derenbach, can we leave that hanging in the balance and go to break? When we come back, Hal Van Herkey has just brought something very important forward, and that is, what is this modeling based on? Is it old modeling, or have they updated that? So, Carl Derenbach, we'll be right back with you. You are a contributor to the book Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Hard Left Turn and a Warning to America. You've really taken a look at this modeling and this data. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, I want to make sure that you know that the first five people that email me at kim@kimmunson.com will receive a complimentary electronic version of the book. We'll be right back.
Predovich and Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich and Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich and Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich and Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich and Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
The silent odorless killer, CO2. Your house has a monitor. Does your mask? Masks can actually be pretty dangerous, according to the National Institutes of Health. They say that inhaling high levels of carbon dioxide, CO2, may be life-threatening. OSHA does not recommend masks in oxygen-deprived environments, specifically elevations over 3,000 vertical feet. The mask mandate is not for your health. It's killing you. Killing you one breath at a time, thanks to selfish Governor Polis, paid for by FECUnited.com.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. The voter's guide that Rick Turnquest and I put together for you is there. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get first look at all of the upcoming guests, as well as our most recent podcasts and op-eds. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. In studio with me is Hal Van Herkey. He is the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool. It's a family-owned business located right in Sedalia, Colorado. Hal, it's great to have you here.
Great to be here.
And on the line is Carl Derenbach. He is a contributor to Unmasked 2020, a new book that's out. It's called about Colorado's hard left turn and a warning to America. It's great to have you here, Carl, as well. You are writing for The Federalist. Have pieces in The Complete Colorado. And Hal, you had a great question before we went to break. Set that up again for us.
Yeah, we were talking about various drug protocols and different drugs that might be authorized or might be shied away from as a treatment protocol for COVID-19. And I was saying that regardless of what drug you favor or don't favor, one thing that seemed to be irrefutable is that over the course of this, especially over the last several months, overall doctors and our healthcare professionals have gotten much better at treating people with various protocols, and that your odds, if you contract COVID-19, your odds of being hospitalized or your odds of being in an intensive care unit have gone substantially down since the beginning of this, and that a lot of the models are running off of old data. And I was just curious, given ours and how simplistic it is to begin with, and the fact that all they're looking at is the odds of, you know, if we have X number of hospitalizations, we need Y amount of social distancing. Have they even bothered to adjust the model to reflect the reduced chances of those new cases impacting the number of hospital beds and emergency care units?
Carl, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, they have made some adjustments, but they're still out of kilter with the real world. What it started with is in the first iteration in March, they came up with this model, had about 60 different variables in it, but in the end, it spit out that Colorado would see around 30,000 plus deaths, which at the time agreed, because that would be the U.S.'s share of it. It agreed with the Imperial College London study of 2.2 million deaths in the U.S., because Colorado's share of 2.2 million would be 35,000, 38,000, something like that. So when it first came out, it sort of agreed with what was the current model. And then within a couple of weeks, it diverged wildly from that model, where the rest of the world was saying that model was too pessimistic and we're not going to see 2.2 million, and that model was panned. Colorado doubled down and changed the parameters in the model such that they're predicting if we had done nothing, we would have seen 80,000 deaths. And then over the summer, that 80,000 sort of tweaked down to 70,000. And in their recent iteration, it's down to 55,000. So right now, they believe if we did nothing, we'd be at 55,000 deaths, which is way worse than that 2.2 million, about twice as much as that 2.2 million iteration. So we're still wildly out of kilter with the real world, but they have sort of made some accommodation for better treatment and less lethality. But they haven't made any changes to the prevalence of it and the amount of, I don't know how contagious it is, because still they predict that if, I'm looking at it online right now, they predict that if we did nothing, they think that 5.5 million Coloradans would get symptomatic infections, which is impossible because we have 5.8 million in the state. So the model is still out of kilter with the real world, but they have made some adjustments to accommodate for changing mortality of it.
Well, it really is out of kilter, but yet they're using this modeling in their decisions about shutting down our lives, shutting down our livelihoods, whether or not we can get together with friends. They're using this modeling to control our lives. Carl Dierenbach, we have just a couple of minutes. What's your thoughts on that?
The model just reflects hospitalizations, and then it has predictions. So the model is just trying to put on this sheen of science so that whatever Polis does, he can say, I'm following the science. And the model is being really used as backup to let him do basically whatever he wants. If he wants to change bars from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, if he wants a mask mandate, all those orders that he does are based on the model looking forward, saying, oh, look at this harm that's going to happen. Even though the model is simply reflecting hospitalizations that happened a couple weeks ago in its actual output, its predictions are used by Polis to just do whatever Polis wants. So he likes that the model is scary. He likes that if we drop 5%, there's going to be thousands of deaths supposedly around the corner. then he can justify doing anything he wants.
Which is exactly what he's done. 217 as of the other day, executive orders. This guy is governing by fiat, if you will. Carl Dierenbach, I so appreciate you joining us. You've really delved into these numbers. You've got an excellent piece at The Federalist, as well as a very excellent chapter in the book, Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Hard Left Turn and a Warning to America. The first five people that email me at kim@kimmunson.com will receive a complimentary electronic copy. Carl Dierenbach, what's your final thought for today?
We've got to somehow, and I've been trying this through my articles and through Twitter, we've got to be able to get through to the governor to consider more in his thinking than just the model, and that the model might not be as perfect as he thinks it is. We've just got to get social pressure on. And as a last resort, if you really don't like what he's doing, there is one thing we can do, and that is if we could somehow turn the state Senate and the state House of Representatives in this election, they have the power through a simple majority vote to end the emergency that Paulus is in. Under the statute, they could end the emergency anytime they want. But this Democratic-led Senate, state Senate, and state House will not do it because they like the power that he brings to their party.
Okay, Carl Dierenbach, that is a very important point. And Rick Turnquist and I make the case to vote Republican. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim.
Okay. And Hal Van Herkey, a valued partner of the Kim Munson Show, it's great having you here.
Thank you.
Goes by quickly.
Goes by very fast.
Our quote for today is Vince Lombardi. He says, it's not whether you get knocked down, it's whether you get up. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.